folding pocket.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Hello and welcome to the Fast and the Curious as we debrief the first race of the 2024 season. Racing is back, and so is your favourite Formula One podcast, The Fast and the Curious. This is team principal Greg James stepping in for one of our key drivers, Betty Glover, who is off for her birthday. Happy birthday, Betty, alongside Christian Hugill. Christian, hello.
Good afternoon or morning, depending on when you're listening to this pre-recorded podcast. Greg James, hello there.
We will guide you through the brilliantly wild world of Formula One with chats to the drivers, the teams around them, and everybody in between. So if you're a brand new listener, you're very welcome. Make sure you hit subscribe. Make sure you hit subscribe on our YouTube channel, which we launched last week, so you can see us in glorious Technicolor in our brand new studio. Thing is, though, we won't be in glorious Technicolor in our studio today because this is a Bahrain debrief. So this is a sort of scrambled together emergency podcast, which is what we're going to do throughout the season. Yes, we'll have those big episodes in our studio, but also we'll always react to the race. And that's what we're doing, isn't it? We're reacting to the race.
Or you could call it race reaction.
You could call it either of those things. You could call it reaction to the race or race
Both
reaction.
Work, I think.
Yeah, good, it's good.
So Christian Hugill is our resident F1 mega fan, expert, nerd, dork, enthusiast, anorak, some might say as well.
No, sure.
But more than that, a friend and also a fountain of knowledge on this incredibly weird and exciting sport. You must have been very excited when the first lights out and away we go happened yesterday.
Yeah, the heart pumping is a good moment when you watch. I always watch the lights and waiting for the lights to go out, and then the eyeballs immediately pan down to the cars to see who's got a getaway. Well, and yeah, it's a lovely moment to see them back because you sort of forget when you watch pre-season testing that they do actually race. So it was lovely to see them going in wheel-to-wheel action again. And qualifying as well. I enjoyed qualifying on Saturday because that was fun as well. I think, in fact, if I interrupt myself there, producer Jimmy points out to me that qualifying was on Friday and the race was on Saturday. And I'm keen for us to keep that in the edit because everybody made that mistake all the time over the weekend. And I was so confused on Saturday. It completely altered my life, the race being on Saturday. We should explain, by the way, that's the case because there's a religious holiday in Saudi Arabia for the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix. So they had to move the Saudi Grand Prix to Saturday. But the FIA rules, the sports governing body, suggest there needs to be 7 days in between races. So they also had to move the Bahrain Grand Prix. So that's why the first two races are on Saturday. So, yes, I enjoyed qualifying on Friday as well. So it was lovely to have it back. But, Greg, I did have to have a word with myself because qualifying sort of, I expected the gap between Red Bull and the rest of the cars to be big. And then in qualifying, it wasn't quite as big as I thought it would be. And that got me excited. And then the race, it was exactly what I thought it would be after all. So I've sort of calmed down now. We're still going to have a good season. We're still going to have plenty of races that are good fun. But we also need to acknowledge that Red Bull is still the best and particularly Max Verstappen is still the best.
Well, this is it. OK, so what we have done as Formula One fans, as fans of fun and as fans of, you know, competition, we have put in place coping mechanisms for this. And those are sometimes you just have to ignore the guy that's out front. OK, and that's OK. Not saying it's bad, not saying it's boring. I'm just saying we're going to leave him to do his own thing and then focus on the rest because there are plenty of stories, aren't there? Plenty of stories.
Oh, so many. And we'll get into those a little bit later. But I suppose what I didn't expect, Greg, is because we knew the rule changes weren't changing much from 2023 into 2024, I expected Red Bull to still be quickest, but I thought the pack would have got closer because I sort of thought, how quick can Red Bull make this sort of iteration of car. What I didn't expect them to do is come out in 2024 and go, we found a totally new way of making these rule change, of this set of rules work for us.
Mm.
So they're playing catch up again. So it is one of those where, yes, we put coping mechanisms in. We're still going to enjoy the season. We're still going to have a lot of fun. Formula One always throws up so much action. That's not a worry. But at the same time, you have to take your hat off to Red Bull because we're witnessing genius. You know, Adrian Newey and his design team have found another way of changing the game. Max is driving at historic, unprecedented levels of brilliance. He's one of the all-time greats. So we mutually say to them, well done, you're doing ridiculously amazing things. You're all brilliant. That is sensational. But we equally would like it to be a little bit closer. And we have to maybe try and hope that Ferrari and Mercedes cars being better behaved this year will enable them to get closer and closer as the season goes through.
Well, I think the other thing here is the context of that 1-2 finish in Bahrain is that it's set against a really tumultuous off-track couple of weeks, 3 weeks, maybe even a month, really, because I haven't mentioned this publicly, but when you and Betty spoke to Christian Horner at the Red Bull launch, whenever that was, you did an amazing job at actually asking him about those accusations at the time because the investigation was ongoing. It's still going. There was such a noise over the weekend, the last week or so. This story has taken on a life of its own. It is mutated and it is it's a tabloid story. It's on every meme account. For Red Bull to achieve what they did at the weekend with that in the background is pretty extraordinary.
That's extraordinary, and huge hats off to Max and his race engineers and his team and Sergio as well. Sergio had a very good weekend. We'll come to that in a minute. So well done to them on track. A lot of hardworking people at Red Bull who deserve credit for that. If you've not been following the situation, most have, you know, very briefly, allegations a couple of weeks before Red Bull's launch came out against Christian Horner. There was a complaint made. Christian Horner has always denied these allegations. Red Bull say they've investigated the allegations and found no wrongdoing, and Christian was able to carry on in his role, and he did carry on in his role while that investigation was ongoing. He was still at the car launch at Bahrain pre-season testing at the first race of the season. But then after Red Bull said that their investigation had concluded, then alleged leaked messages from Christian allegedly were leaked to certain F1 journalists. They've gone all over the internet, so everyone's seen them. Red Bull have sort of very much said, we're carrying on as normal. That dominated the race weekend, as did, you know, Christian's wife, Jerry, turning up at the paddock. And then, even after the race weekend, we then wake up to the news that Jos Verstappen, Max's dad, the ex-F1 driver and a hugely influential figure, obviously, in Max's career, has basically, it seems, had a falling out with Christian and told Christian he needs to go and done interviews suggesting that publicly. Then Red Bull put out another statement saying, no, the team is united, it's business as usual. The problem is it isn't. There's certain cut-through moments in Formula One, you know, fans of Formula One will listen to this podcast week in, week out, but we'll also have people dip in who are casual fans. And the last time F1 had sort of big cut through was the Lewis Hamilton move to Ferrari, where I've got non-Formula One fans texting me saying, oh, this is unbelievable. It's a really sad situation for Formula One that it's had a big cut through tabloid moment in this situation, which is a horrible, unpleasant situation for all involved. And as much as Red Bull are putting out this statement saying it's business as usual, it isn't. We've got the dad of the world champion and the team star coming out making statements in the press. That is not business as usual. It's messy. It's unpleasant. It's not good for Red Bull. It's not what F1 wants. It's not the sport's fault. But it's just really unpleasant. And it's so sad that my friends are texting me going, oh, what about this? It's like, we should be talking about racing. And I, as a Formula One presenter, want to talk about racing. So I hope there is some sort of conclusion soon, because it doesn't seem to be going away. It just seems to be snowballing and snowballing, and that's just not good for anyone.
And the other thing that makes me really sad is that when gossip goes mad around the world and everything, I really hope the people that are involved and are probably quite defenceless and feeling quite vulnerable are getting the help and care and attention they deserve as well. Because these things might just be apparently about one person at the moment, but think of the knock-on effect of all of that, the stress from families and friends and the people that are accusing and all the rest of it. I feel I just feel really sad about the whole situation, actually. I think it's really bleak.
There's a lot going on off track at Red Bull, and Red Bull's PR message is still to say everything's fine, we're carrying on as normal, we're focusing on racing. That is not the case. So let's hope that we can soon get back to focusing on racing. And we've already praised Greg Max for another sublime weekend. We spoke a lot on the podcast last season about Sergio Perez. It's the final year of his contract. He was on the podcast over the winter as well and was on great form. A little well done to Sergio, because very strong race performance from him. Yes, he finished 20 seconds behind Max, but Red Bull don't need him to be on Max's rear wing. They need him to be coming second and Max's backup man if anything goes wrong with Max. That's exactly what he did. I said this over the course of the weekend. If Sergio has 23 more races like that, they will be incredibly tempted to put him back in that seat for next year. So a very strong start to the season for Sergio Perez. He does tend to start strong, though. So the challenge will now for Sergio will be to carry it on. But the tasty old man, as he's been called on this podcast by one of his fans, and as he admitted to us is his nickname, did a good job this weekend.
Should we talk about the most exciting overtake of the whole race, in my opinion?
What was that in your opinion, Greg?
It was when Carlos went past Charles Leclerc. And it roused, although it might have done, David Croft as well. He said, "Oh, I've missed this." And it was really fun to see the Ferraris having a little battle.
There's a lot of reasons to be cheerful from this weekend. Because those of us who wanted a closer battle at the front, we might not get that yet. But Ferrari didn't quite set up their car right, which means that gap, that 20-odd second gap, which Max won the race, was probably exaggerated. But also, this is going to be fun between these two this year, because you've got Charles Leclerc, who's going, "Right, ladies and gentlemen, I want to stamp my authority and show I can lead this team, even though you're bringing in a legend like Lewis Hamilton." And you've got Carlos Sainz going, "I'm in the shop window. Look at me, everybody. Come and sign me. I'm brilliant." So when you get, Fred Vasseur on the radio going, saying to Carlos, "Let Charles through." No. Carlos will have no interest in that. What's in it for me, Governor? Absolutely not. I don't think he quite speaks like that. Governor's not a particularly Spanish term, is it? But those two bickering and battling, if that's how it is in race one, imagine when that gets towards the end of the season. Imagine when that gets to mid-season, when the contract talk really spices up. I'm excited by this. This is going to be a lot of fun. And I do believe as well that when Ferrari, as I say, do get that setup sorted, they can get a bit closer to Max. And I want to see that aggression on Max into turn one. Those two Ferrari guys, get your bloody elbows out into turn one, because the key to some good racing this season is you two getting ahead of Max into turn one a couple of times. So that Ferrari are going to excite us this year. We're going to have some good old ding-dongs with Ferrari this year.
So the weak point of it, I suppose, any race is when the lights go out. And can you get an advantage there? Can there be a little error and you can pounce on?
It's when you're closest, isn't it? And Ferrari are good in qualifying. Yeah. Ferrari are...
You're static.
Yeah, you're literally next to him.
We'll beat him at a standstill.
But Ferrari have also had good qualifying. You know, there's a serious point to it because Charles Leclerc in particular is a great qualifier. But I want to praise Carlos Sainz. He was my driver of the day, aside from Max, because he's had a really difficult winter. He's lost his job and he came out this weekend and he looked the most comfortable of the two Ferrari drivers in the car. He got on the podium. It's round one to Carlos Sainz in the battle of the Ferrari drivers this year. Really impressive. And if you're a top team, I think Carlos Sainz might be the best ever driver to lose a seat in Formula One. Going back to when Damon Hill lost his seat despite being the world champion, we're on similar levels there. It only really Lewis you'd replace Carlos with. So Carlos has got to carry on in this form, and I think he will. I think he's a bloody good driver, Carlos Sainz.
Okay, 2 points on that then to pick up on. Do you think there would be anybody at Ferrari watching Carlos this weekend and there'll be a shadow of a doubt of, oh, maybe we don't want to lose him?
Yes, I do.
Really?
Because now, I think Lewis is still capable of operating at the very top level that he was when he won his championships. But there are those in Formula One that doubt that. So, you know, there are those in Formula One that think, I wonder if he's past his prime, like all greats get to at some point. Personally, I don't. But it is a bit of a gamble from Ferrari, because you are, you know, getting a guy who's starting his contract in his 40s, and you've got Carlos, a racing driver in his prime, and a bloody good one. So yeah, it's a gamble. And I'd be really surprised if somewhere in that operation, there isn't at least a couple of people who think, is this the right thing to be doing? And that's what Carlos wants. That's this season. That's your job, Carlos. Put those doubts in their minds. And also, show yourself to Toto Wolff and people like that. Give him a headache. Toto's got some bloody good options for that Lewis Hamilton seat at Mercedes.
I feel that everyone's very pleased for him, because as much as people will be excited about the Lewis Hamilton news, obviously lots of people aren't, but as much as people are excited, they'll feel sorry for Carlos, because he's a friendly, well-liked face. And as you said, a very talented driver. I think you've answered my second question, which was essentially, is it a straight swap, Lewis to Ferrari and Carlos to Mercedes? But maybe you're saying it's not as clear as that.
We had this conversation off air, me and Betty Glover. She texted me this the other week, so I'll bring it on air in her absence, Greg. She said to me, if you had to hedge your bets right now, who do you think's getting that seat? I think it's Kimi Antonelli, the wonder kid who Karun Chandhok talked to us about on the podcast a few weeks ago, who, by the way, made his F2 debut this weekend. I kept an eye on him and had, again, a very solid debut. It could be that they think actually he needs a bit more experience in somewhere like a Williams first, like George Russell did, and therefore they go for a more experienced option for a year or two, in which case maybe there's an option for an Alonso or a Sainz. But I still think right now, and this could change, if I had to put my money right now, I think that's Antonelli's seat.
Well, I think that's very exciting. As we said, there are stories everywhere in this sport, and make sure you keep coming back to the Fast and the Curious as we speculate on all of them. So let's stick with Mercedes now, shall we, and have a chat about George. George had a good race, Lewis not so much. Where's the Mercedes camp today as they debrief?
I'm not too worried about Lewis. He didn't have a brilliant weekend, but I think that was more set up. And actually, earlier in the weekend, he looked really good in the car. So I just don't think Lewis got the setup quite right. So I don't particularly worry about Lewis going forward. But George had an excellent weekend and was the better of the two Mercedes over qualifying in the race. You look at last year, Lewis finished third in the championship on 234 points. George finished eighth on 175, behind both Ferraris and behind Lando Norris. Bad season for George last year, by his own admission. George this year needs to prove to Toto Wolff that he can lead that team in Lewis's absence. And he got off to a really good start. A lot of the drivers under pressure got off to great starts this weekend. Sergio Perez, really good start. George, really good start. Carlos, really good start. Lance Stroll had a good weekend at Aston Martin. So George had a really solid start this weekend. He looked good. I don't think that Mercedes was ever going to be quick enough this weekend to beat the two Ferrari cars. Hence, he finished fifth with Sainz third and Leclerc fourth. But George, I think, will be very happy with that.
The other end of the spectrum, shall we talk about Alpine, who are having a bit of a shocker. In the lineup, 19th and 20th, finished 17th and 18th. What is happening at that team at the moment? Doesn't feel like a happy team, does it?
It's a mess. It's an absolute mess. Right, I want to take you back to the 2022 season. Alpine finished fourth behind the big three, behind Red Bull, Ferrari, and Mercedes. And we're now in the very realistic proposition where Alpine, this is Renault, this is a works team with their own engine who've won world championships, we're in the position where they are the slowest car on the grid, and two of their senior figures have reportedly, and I believe this to be true, left the team over the weekend. One of those guys, their technical director, Matt Harmon, good guy, bright guy, good reputation in Formula One. I don't think that's where the problem was. There's some big, big problems with management, with direction in this team. They've got good people in at Enstone, in that factory. They've got heritage in Formula One. They've got two good drivers in Pierre and Esteban. They've got good people working for them. Something is fundamentally wrong.
It's a real shame. It's a real shame, isn't it, for the sport? Because that's, as you said, that's a heritage team.
They finished 17th and 18th, and the only people to finish behind them were Valtteri Bottas, who had big problems in a pit stop. Logan Sargeant, who literally stopped on the track because his steering wheel broke. You know, you had people like, Lance Stroll and Nico Hülkenberg, who had first corner incidents, still finishing miles ahead of them. I don't know who's steering the ship, and I don't know what's going on at Renault board level. There's big problems there, and it needs sorting out from the very top. Don't expect a McLaren-style revival from them this year. Don't expect an upgrade by the time of the Austrian Grand Prix or Silverstone Grand Prix, and they're going to leap forward. This is going to take years to recover from. This is a bad situation.
Maybe they've spent too much time making fleeces.
Oh, this is a reference to my Alpine fleece, isn't it, that you said I got?
Have you burnt it?
No,
or is it still? Is it low rotation now, is it? Oh, he's going to his cupboard.
Oh, it's upstairs.
I didn't realise that was a cupboard. His cupboard's got a load of hats on it.
It's upstairs. I thought it was a wall. No, it's not. That's a cupboard. Right. I thought it was in there. I was going to show you it. But no, the Alpine fleece was a birthday present, which I still like the Alpine fleece.
Well, and personally, I am an enormous... I've not really spoken about this too publicly. I've mentioned it on an interview that I did with Johnny Smith, who was
friend
on
the podcast. Yeah.
That I'm an enormous old Renault fanboy from when I was a kid. I used to love the old Renaults, like the Renault 25s, the Renault, the first sort of Clios, the first Twingos that you could get in. I used to love those big old Espaces. In fact, this we should do a bit of balance here on you saying there's problems at Renault. I'm going to say there aren't that many problems on the road car side of things. You might not know this, but the Renault 5, the new R5 was launched this week. Did you see it?
Oh, the new one's really cool. Look at that.
Right, so the R5 looks absolutely amazing. I'm thinking of seriously putting down 150 quid to register my interest to get first dibs on one.
Also, I'm seeing all the models in the proper Renault yellow, which is what I'd like the Formula One team to go back to. This is what ideally I want them to be refitted top to bottom. I want them to go back to the Renault yellow colour scheme, and I want them to be battling for wins. That's what I want. None of this Alpine. Alpine is their European sports car brand, we should say. But I like a Renault. I'm like you, Greg.
Maybe Alpine give Gasly and Ocon just one of these each to go around the track. See what happens.
It does. I've made it clear on this podcast, I'm not a huge road car fan, but that thing looks so cool. I'd love one of those.
Doesn't it look cool?
It looks great.
Can I tell you the really nerdy, brilliant bit of it that made me laugh out loud and go, I want one of these immediately.
Yeah.
It was, if you have a look in the interior, there is an optional extra to put a little basket by the gear stick to put baguettes in it.
Oh, fantastic. Excellent. But Greg, does the optional extra to have the baguette basket cost you an extra bit of dough?
It's a fantastic joke.
Thank you.
And I can't pretend it's not. And it's a lovely place to leave our Renault discussion. So that's Alpine / Renault and the baguette holder that Pierre Gasly will have fitted to his car for the Jeddah Grand Prix. You mentioned Logan Sargeant with his steering wheel problem, which feels so basic and so ridiculous. Why didn't you drive well? Well, my steering wheel broke, which feels pretty fundamental, and it's one of those things like that definitely needs to work.
I once did a whole podcast on the Formula One steering wheels and was blown away by the technology in them and how much I learned. Like, it was ridiculous. There was like, these are like world-class computers sat in front of the drivers. Like, the technology in them is unbelievable. So it sounds frankly ridiculous and frankly hilarious that we go, oh, Williams had, but they both, because it happened to both drivers. Logan stopped on the track and it wasn't wasn't obvious why, whether he'd made a mistake or there was a problem, but it was a steering wheel problem. And then similar happened to Alex later in the race. And it sounds ridiculous, but actually Williams upgrading the steering wheel this year and having teething problems, when you realise the technology in them, it's almost quite understandable. You know, no one would go, if you had, when you have a fuel pump problem and there's problems pumping fuel down the car, everyone goes, oh, fair enough. A steering wheel problem sounds stupid, but actually, again, like everything in Formula One, it's not just a steering wheel. It controls so much of the car. It's ridiculous. So, yeah, unfortunately, we don't really know the true pace of Williams because both drivers had steering wheel problems. I mean, Logan literally stopped on the track and then had to go into the pits to change. So Logan was miles down. So, and actually, Logan had a really good start to the race. He'd made up a couple of places on track because he had a bad qualifying, but actually a really solid start to the race. That's a shame for him. And Alex was sort of, as he often is, pushing up towards the point. So unfortunately, we don't quite know where Williams are. So we hope they won't have any similar problems for Saudi, because it wasn't wheelie ideal, was it?
Did you just say it wasn't wheelie ideal?
I might have done.
Okay. But there was one thing that Brundle said on commentary, which was he thought maybe it was too bright.
He said that Alex's looked brighter than he would like it. That wasn't what was going wrong, but maybe that is a teething problem with these new steering wheels. My favourite thing was, we always talk about how technical the sport is, but on this new Williams steering wheel, at one point, Alex has just simply said, "Car too hot!" in big, bold letters. And I just loved that. The car was, "I'm too hot! I'm too hot. I really liked that.
Let's talk RB. Let's talk the driver swap, which really was the biggest point of friction from the weekend. And it came from a man who you don't normally associate with friction, Daniel Ricciardo. And Yuki Tsunoda had a little falling out. Do you want to tell us about this?
Yeah, so late on in the race, and by the way, Yuki Tsunoda on track had a very good weekend. Out-qualified Daniel Ricciardo, Yuki qualified 11th, Daniel down in 14th. And Yuki looked like he'd got the edge on Daniel throughout the race. But towards the end of the race, Daniel had been put on softer tyres, the faster tyres, and therefore had come up behind Yuki, which was a slightly questionable strategy, given that Yuki had had the advantage all weekend. And RB told Yuki to let Daniel pass, but at the time, Yuki was chasing Kevin Magnussen in the Haas, so Yuki was understandably irritated. But Yuki ruined his good weekend by, after the checkered flag, and most people will have seen this on social media because it wasn't picked up by the main TV feed, Yuki was so cross that he sort of dive-bombed down the inside of Ricciardo and locked his brakes, risking a collision between the two after the checkered flag. Now, Yuki's had a good moment in his career. He comprehensively beat Nyck de Vries last season, as was a key part of one of the early Drive to Survive episodes. There's a lot of competition for places at Red Bull. Sergio Perez is coming to the end of his contract. Yuki is a contender for that Red Bull seat. There is also Liam Lawson knocking at the door, who of course deputised so well for Daniel when Daniel broke his wrist last year. And I still think Liam will drive some races this season. So there's a lot of pressure on Red Bull's drivers. And the temperament is a key thing. And Yuki's showing more speed than he used to, but he needs to show he's got the temperament to be in a leading team if he's going to have any future in Formula One. He can't be behaving like that. He needs to be better than that. He needs to be more mature than that. So good pace from Yuki this weekend, but he really put a dampener on it with that.
Yeah, fair enough. I guess it's really difficult when you're hot and tired and you've been concentrating that long and it just feels frustrating and you had a great weekend. I understand it. And look, these drivers are petulant.
There is getting grumpy on the radio and there is locking your brakes after the checkered flag. Yeah, fair enough. It's a step point further. Taken. And you see this sort of thing sometimes in junior categories. You don't really see it in F1. And Greg, everything you've said is absolutely spot on. It's an unbelievably high-pressure situation, but this is why the best in the world. It's a blotch against your CV if people are questioning your temperament, because you need someone who can keep your cool under stratospheric pressure. So it won't help his cause. He needs to get that side of him under control.
Okay. Before we say Saudi Arabia, see you later. Good. Saudi Arabia, good. See you later.
Yeah, it's good that.
We're off to Jeddah. That is a week after the last one. It's a back-to-back Grand Prix situation. It's another Saturday race. Tell us about Jeddah. Take us to the circuit. What do we expect there?
It's a street circuit, but it's not quite as much of a street circuit as other street circuits. So it's not as tight and twisty as Monaco or some of the tight and twisty sections in Baku.
Bless you.
Thank you. But it's a fast circuit. It's a relatively new addition to the calendar. So Max won in 2022, Sergio won in 2023. It'll be interesting because a lot of people have been saying that it's so different to Bahrain in so many ways that it will be interesting to see if the pecking order stays the same. I would think Saudi's probably a better McLaren track than Bahrain is. The McLaren don't historically go brilliantly well in Bahrain, so we might get a better showing from McLaren. But it's fast and it's quite unforgiving as well, in the sense that if you make a mistake with it being a street track and with it being so quick, you can have big problems if you make a small mistake with your speed being sacrificed at the top end of the straight. So normally throws up a good race. Last year, Sergio won. Sergio Perez does well around street circuits. So if you're Sergio Perez, you're hoping that your teammate isn't 20 seconds up the road this time. And of course, Sergio winning in Saudi was what prompted all the sort of talk this time last year of can Sergio challenge for the title? I don't think he can, but he will look to knowing he won last year, knowing he goes well on street tracks, he'll quite fancy a go at Max.
Lots of fun to be had in Jeddah, so we will say Saudi Arabia. And just to let you know, the all-female series, the F1 Academy, gets started as well. So we'll be back later this week with a preview of their season with friend of the show, one of our favourite young drivers, Chloe Grant. She'll be joining us in the studio for a catch-up on her plans for the year. And she'll be sort of our correspondent for the second year of the F1 Academy. Christian, thank you. Comprehensive, informative and hilarious review of the Bahrain Grand Prix. Very nice to get back into the swing of things. That's very much how the podcast is going to run throughout this season, by the way. If you're brand new to us, we're going to give you an episode after the Grand Prix as much as we possibly can, especially if there are big talking points. And then we're going to be in the studio for our regular episodes as well. So make sure you subscribe on your podcast feed. Or if you want to watch us and see our lovely faces and all our guests and all the things, then you should subscribe to our YouTube channel. That is just Fast and the Curious on YouTube. You'll find it on there. All the links to it are our social media accounts and everything. Christian, anything else to add?
No, I found this very therapeutic because I had a lot to say in my mind, sort of, and we waited 24 hours to record the podcast. So it's been good therapy for me in terms of getting all my thoughts out into the open. I feel refreshed now, ready to go again in Saudi Arabia. So I've enjoyed it on a personal level, Greg.
And I enjoyed it on a personal level because I just loved having it back. I really love the sort of the drone of a Grand Prix just to sort of settle me at the weekend. So good. I get lots of stuff done during it. I sort of keep an eye on that, do a few emails, chat to a few mates. Like, what is such a lovely thing to have. And let me tell you this, here's my hot take, because lots of Formula One podcasts do hot takes, don't they? Should I give you a hot take?
Yeah, go on then.
Love the green steak. Love the green steak.
The Sauber livery is nice, the bright green. Also, RB looks nice on track with the blue and the sort of silvery bits on it as well. And actually,
but the green's better. The green's nice. That is the best looking car.
Also, despite the fact there's all the carbon because they're all chasing the weights, didn't actually look as all the cars didn't look too black as I thought they would do at the weekends. Well, that's a nice thing as well. So yeah, that was a positive. I still want yellow back in Formula One.
Well, you might well get that with the new Renault R5. With 0% finance across the range. The new Renault R5. Electric is the future.
I tell you what, guys, come on. Sponsor the podcast because you've got an actual voiceover man there. Like, I could do it in the style of the old X Factor man if you liked. The Renault R5!
We've run out of time, actually, unfortunately.
0% finance!
Goodbye, everybody.
Radiant!